Hi there, this is the brand new episode of Clan Chat, the official podcast of Glasgow Clan, bringing you the exclusive interviews from behind the scenes at the club. I'm Craig Anderson, and the club are still on the road as we hurtle through September, waiting patiently for Mickey Mouse and his pals to clear out of Brayhead so we can go home. In the meantime, we'll speak to another couple of colourful characters as we bring you the latest from the club, and it's a couple of good interviews worth listening to. First up, we have to be on our best behaviour as the boss is in today, and we get an exclusive chat with the Chief Operating Officer, Gareth Chalmers, to give us a peek behind the scenes over the summer that was, and what we'll see from Clan Towers this season. We'll also get a lengthy chat with forward Mathieu Roy, ahead of his return to Sheffield Steelers, as we take a journey through his ice hockey journey and what it was like to play with a younger Matt Becker and Scott Pitt. We've also got another Clan conundrum to get the grey matter going as well. You're listening to Clan Chat. Let's start with the Clan conundrum, and before I set this week's one, I have to begin with an apology. Last week I set the question that Clan scored 31 times in the 10 games between them and Belfast Giants, with 12 players all scoring, but I asked which player scored the most goals for Clan in those games against Belfast. What I didn't do was reveal the answer at the end of the show.
No!
Such was the excitement over Chris Holt's interview, it completely slipped my mind. I wanted to blame producer Stuart, but he tells me I'm on my own on this one. He is right, to be fair. Anyway, I can tell you the answer was Gerard Hansen, who scored 6 times against the Giants and was the Clan top scorer in those particular fixtures. And there, I've put you out of your misery, and I can only apologise for this faux pas. Back to this week, and on Sunday, Glasgow Clan head to Sheffield Steelers for the first meeting between the two teams this season. Brendan Connolly went to Yorkshire from the Clan in the summer, but can you tell me who the last player was to play for the Clan, then move to the Steelers? Answer to come at the end of the show. I promise this time.
Hey, Purple Army, Fitzy here. Welcome to the podcast. Enjoy.
Two tough trips on the road last week saw Clan head to Belfast Giants on Challenge Cup duty on Saturday and then to Cardiff Devils on Sunday for the first league game of the new season. Scott Pitt got the only goal in the 6-1 loss to the Challenge Cup holders on Saturday, a power play marker with assists from Matt Poofle and Matt Becker. From there it was on to Cardiff and a good display by the Clan, but sadly another loss as the playoff champions took the points in a 5-3 win for Andrew Lord's men. Clan were on the mark through Nolan Laporte, Matt Poofle and Mathieu Roy, but the night belonged to Cardiff. Big shout to David McLeod and the equipment staff for their efforts leaving Glasgow on Friday morning at 7 a.m. and getting back on Monday night via Belfast and Cardiff, of course. Well done, guys.
I'm Scott Tansky from the Glasgow Clan, and you're listening to the Clan Chat.
So the weekend is almost upon us and Clan hit the road again, of course, when they make a return trip to Cardiff Devils on Saturday night, hoping to avenge the loss from Sunday. Then it's on to Yorkshire for the first meeting of the season with a new look Sheffield Steelers, now under the auspices of Aaron Fox, their head coach. Fans will remember the last two visits there last season when Clan racked up two impressive 6-0 and 6-1 victories, but in actual fact Glasgow won all their away games in Sheffield last year and have won 6 of the last 7 meetings between the clubs. Steelers of course are a very different beast and certainly a lot different from when our number 15 Mathieu Roy played there. Roy spent 4 years as a Steeler between 2014 and 2018 where he won 2 league titles and a playoff crown, and he became the king. I spoke to Mathieu ahead of his return to a place he knows well, and we looked back in his career, starting out in his hometown of Amos in Quebec, and I started by asking where his ice hockey journey began.
Started with my mum a long time ago. I was, 4 years old. She brought me to High Scotland back in Canada almost every day. She wasn't working, so, and after that, my dad took over, and yeah, here you go.
So when did you discover you had a knack for scoring goals then?
Probably in junior, in midget triple A, I was more a passer, I think. And when I got to junior, my first 2 years was okay, but my third year, I think I scored 50 goals in the season. And since that, I kind of understand I was there to score goals, and that's what I've tried to been doing for the last few years.
See, as someone who watches hockey, I'm always interested in guys in your position who can just score goals almost at will. And I'm always wondered, is it an instinctive thing or is it something that's trained into you? Or is it a bit of both, maybe?
It needs to be, I think, mental too. I prepare myself to every game to try to put the puck in the net. And if I don't, I'm not happy about myself. So I work and practice on my shot. I work on my practice of tipping pucks and all those things. And you practice like you play, so it helps a lot.
Good. Now you made the step up to the ECHL to play for Pensacola Ice Pilots, a team who sadly are no longer there, but you did well that season. How long did it take you to adjust to that level of hockey?
it was funny. My first few years, well, in Pensacola, the team folded after my first year, so I ended up in Florida. Got there, I was still rolling. I was still a young guy, but I had to do other things to get in the lineup. So I developed another, I was blocking shot, got a few fights my first few years pro. But I think I step up in playoff my third year pro, and since then I've been using me as a offensive league player.
I want to ask you about Florida. You went there a year after Pensacola, and you know, Florida, you get this idea, and I think that's a lot of what we see on television. It's sunshine, it's glamorous, it looks great and everything. But I think where the Everblades are, it's a place called Estero. I think population-wise, it's similar to where you're from in Quebec, the town called Amos. So was it similar in the way you were living at the time?
No, there's nothing compare my city from Amos to Estero. Estero is just a little name, but it's in Florida. It's all the cities are right next to each other, so it's massive. There's a lot of things to do. Like you said, it's the sunshine states, and there's nothing compared to where I'm from.
I was going to say the weather's the obvious difference, of course. And of course, it was here you got to meet and play with two young gentlemen by the name of Scott Pitt and Matt Becker. Can you remember your first impressions of them as guys and as teammates?
Becker is always a fun guy to be around. I remember when we walk in the room, we click right away. And I remember Scott, he came from, I think we picked him up just before playoff. He came from university. He was a real quiet guy, and the year after, he just become Scott Pitt and doing what he's doing right now.
Now, you captained Everblades to the Kelly Cup in 2012, beating Las Vegas Wranglers in five games. How proud a moment was that for you?
It was probably the best. It was unbelievable. It just, everything went so well for us as a team. Every series we won was unbelievable. We won them in five games. It was like just a dream run to the playoff.
And can you describe the feeling of lifting the cup above your head?
It was unbelievable. It was the first time the Florida Everblades won the cup there. Especially as the captain, you're always the first one to pick it up. It's a really special moment. Knowing, too, that you got your family and parents are watching on the internet the game at the same time. So, really fun.
What's your recollection of the series? I mean, five games suggest it was quite one-sided. Was it when you look back on it?
The
series that lasted the five games. You guys won 4-1. Was it quite a one-sided series?
It was 4-1, exactly. In the final, we were lucky because we were going away every time, and we were splitting 1-1, and we're coming back for three games at home, and every series we won all three at home, so it was fun.
Now, a couple of years later, you decided to come to the UK. Jared Adams was the coach at Sheffield Steelers who brought you here in 2014. What attracted you to a move to the UK at that point in your career?
I don't know. I was in Florida for a couple of years. We won there. I had a good year after I lead the league in points. I think it was time for me to try something else. I actually signed in Norway that year. And a week before the season started, the team folded in Norway. So I was ended up without any team. And I think back then the league year was starting a little later. So I was lucky enough to find a place in Sheffield for me to move.
And it was here you first played with Zach Fitzgerald, of course, the Clan coach. He left Glasgow to go to Sheffield. I think this was getting to your second year. Was he someone you developed a friendship with quite quickly?
Yeah, of course. Fitz is a really lovely boy, a lovely guy. Every time you're around him, it's always joy and happiness. So he likes to talk with everyone. He's really fun. So the minute he was there, I know Zach for we didn't play against each other, but we were meeting in the summer for our PHPA. We're all representing our team, so every summer we saw each other in Orlando for meetings, so we kind of knew each other before.
Good. Now, you got two league titles in Sheffield, lots of goals, and you became known as the King, and I think that's a play on your surname. The translation, Roy, is King, of course. So what's it like to be the King?
I'm not going to lie to you, it was fun, especially when you win, you know. We had some success in Sheffield every year as I was there, except maybe the last one. But it's fun to go to rink, and I know I'll give all my thumbs up to David Sims. He made it up, and he stayed with it. I thought it was going to be a weak thing, but no, thanks to him, it was fun. I'm not going to lie to you. But it was good.
Now, you've had a lot of big games in your career. We talked about the Kelly Cup success in 2012. I want to ask you about the 2017 playoff final, the game with Cardiff, 7-6 it finished. It was a game that seemed to go on for hours. I was at the game myself, and it was quite a long shift. What was your recollections of it?
My legs were burning. That's all I remember. It was everyone was real tired, but we came out with a big goal. Levi came out with a big goal in the overtime, and that was a trophy we never won in Sheffield when I was there. And it's a real good feeling to win a trophy like that in Nottingham.
How did you keep finding the energy to keep going in that game?
Probably the trophy, you know, just winning it. We're like literally one goal away from a trophy and knowing that Cardiff won have it. So it was good enough for me.
And how did you have the energy to celebrate after? I remember interviewing some guys on the ice. I don't know if I spoke to you, but I mean, every one of you was absolutely tired. You were dead on your feet. So how did you manage to celebrate?
I remember I had to take my skate off because I was dying in there. My feet was killing me, but I think it was pretty early night for the guys that night. I think we did a little party on the bus, but it was tough. But we took care of it the next few days after.
Now, a year later, that was the end of your final year with the Steelers. You mentioned the playoff final that you lost. That was to Cardiff. You decided to retire. You decided to hang up your skates, and you admitted to me in an earlier interview it was a decision you were keen to revisit quite quickly. So what did you do for a year?
I was a salesman. I was selling Harley Davidson back home. Me and my friend opened a new, they opened a new shop there in the Moss in my city, and that was something I wanted to use. It's a great job. It's still a good job, but again, me and my wife, and we had a daughter, and we decided to maybe. I still have the fire in me. I want to score goals. I want to win. It was a long summer, a long winter. Sorry to see every games there, and I knew. That I still have some hockey in me, so that's why I decided to come back.
Was it a case of just waiting for the right opportunity? I mean, you told me before it was a decision you kind of regretted, I think, within a short amount of time, but nothing ever came up for you, so were you just happy to wait until the right offer came along?
Yeah, well, I didn't regret anything. I'm still happy with the decision I made. I had a great job, and the job over there was fun, and but like I said, I wanted to try something new with my little daughter, my wife. But I think it was better for me to wait a full year than come just mid-season in the team and not be as in good shape or anything like that. So I think it was a smart move for me to just wait a full year, get in good shape, and get the fire back. And there we go.
And I have to ask, what's happening with the shop, with the Harley-Davidsons? Is it still going?
Yeah, it's still going. It's still going strong, so... there'll be something for me waiting at home.
Good. Now, the call came from Fitzy to tempt you back. How long did it take you to agree to come?
It was just a talk with the GM and all that, the coaches, my agent, and Glasgow was on number one on my list for the team to come back in this league, and we're happy it happened, and I'm really happy to be here.
And of course, this Sunday you're going back to Sheffield, but we'll get to that in just a second. How much are you enjoying life in Glasgow so far?
Real nice. No, it's real fun. It's a big city. I didn't expect to be that big. A lot of things to do. First of all, there's a great group of guys we're having here in the room, so it helps a lot to go every morning to the practice and play hockey.
Good. As I say, going back to Sheffield on Sunday for the first time, and I expect you'll get an amazing reception from the Steelers fans for what you did for them. How much are you looking forward to going back?
It'll be a fun game on Sunday, but I'm a Glasgow Clan now. I'm here to win games, but I'm not going to enjoy the little moment they're going to give me there, but the minute the puck will be dropped, it'll be a brand new game, and we're there to win some hockey game.
I think there's been a lot of changes at the team since you were last there. The core of British players are certainly still there, guys like Jonathan Phillips and all that. But it certainly will be nice from your point of view to see these guys.
Yeah, they build up a good team this year. New coaches and all. It's pretty much it's a new team, except the British, like you said. So it'll be fun to play. It'll be except the logo in front, everything has changed for them. So I can't wait to play them.
Good. and Clan got a couple of big wins there last season. I know they've got the Cardiff game first on Sunday, but what would it mean to get a big win in Sheffield on Sunday for the Clan?
Well, it means a lot. We need to start winning games, and I think we're going to start with Saturday in Cardiff. We played real well last week. They scored a lot of goal and power play, but we were there against them. It's a big weekend for us, but like I said, Sunday we'll take care of Saturday, and we'll come Sunday ready in Sheffield.
I'm Craig Peacock, and you're listening to Clan Chat.
Glasgow Clan's Mathieu Roy looking forward to his return to Sheffield to face Old Club Steelers this weekend. Off the ice, it's been another summer of activity with a change in coach, a few changes going on in the background, and if you think the great people at Clan Towers sit through the summer with their feet up on their desks all day, think again. It's been all go for the last few months, and I was delighted to get the chance to have Clan's Chief Operating Officer, Gareth Chalmers, on to tell us all about what's been going on from his point of view. But I wanted to know if you had the chance to go on holiday yet this year.
No, that's the answer. I haven't had a holiday in about 6 years now. I don't think it's gets to the end of every season, and I always say to myself, I'm going to take a holiday in April or May, and it never happens. It's just it just never happens because things always pop out the blue, like head coach is leaving or players starting to want to negotiate contracts, so it just doesn't happen. But thankfully, I'm I love my job, so it keeps us going.
If you're listening, Fitzy, stay in place and Gareth can have a holiday.
Yes, you make life a lot easier.
Well, speaking of coaching changes, of course, Pete leaving in the summer and Zach coming in to replace him. Just tell us about that process and, you know, and how it all worked out in the end.
Yeah, well, obviously Pete was coming back, which was always the plan. Pete had signed a 3-year deal. He came to me, we knew he had interest in March, because he was quite open with us, and then we persuaded him to stay, and it came April, and he called me one day and said that the Freiburg had increased the offer, and to be honest, my mindset was that he's probably not going to go, but you've always got to keep your options open, because you know, in sport, head coaches sometimes just decide to move on. So we spoke to Pete for a couple of days. By the end of the week, he decided that he wanted to go, which was disappointing and a bit of a shock to us. You know, like there's two hats for me. There's a personal hat and a Clan hat. Obviously, with the Clan hat, I was bitterly disappointed. The ownership was as well, and but from a personal level, I got why he made the move. Getting into Germany is always very difficult, and if you get an opportunity to do that, you've got to take it. So you know, move on. If he didn't want to be here, you know, it's pointless keeping players or head coaches that don't want to be here. From the offset, I think we've learned from the past that you need to have somebody who understands the league, understands the UK, gets the fan base, and is bought into the way the organisation is progressing. We looked around, spoke at various different candidates, and in the end, we decided to go with Fitzy, just literally because I like what Adam Keefe and Andrew Lord have done in Cardiff. Fitzy absolutely loves the Clan. If he'd had his way, he would have been here a lot longer. And we just discussed the opportunity with him. It was a good stage in his career that I think he was starting to think about looking to do what he could do after his playing career, and it all just fell into place pretty quickly. We had a couple of good chats and talked about players, and it just worked out very well.
So how well has Zach taken to life as a coach so far? It is early days, of course, and you know he's just into the job, but how do you feel he's doing?
He's doing very well. It's always going to take time. Moving from being a player into a coach or even a GM is, I think it's a bit eye-opening for the individual, because everything's from a different perspective. You're looking at it from when you're a player, obviously you're looking at it from a selfish, from a team perspective, where when you have a bigger perspective to look at. We knew that when we appointed Zach, it was, you know, it wasn't going to happen straight away, and it was going to take time. I think he's got the credentials to be a very good head coach. We just need, with the experience that I've got and the ownership's got, we just need to guide him along and help him go into the position. He's no different than Adam Keefe. You know, when he retired as a player and he became a head coach, and it's the same with Andrew Lord and Cardiff. it's just the support mechanism that's around him, and you've got to give him time to learn and grow, and you'll certainly get that here.
And of course, I think you touched upon it there, the fact that you have that experience of recruitment, say that there's one area, whereas, you know, Zach's completely new to that side of it, whereas before him you had Pete, John Tripp, Ryan Finnerty. They were able to kind of go their own way, but, you know, you were there to back them up, whereas you're there to kind of hold this hand this time.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, we learned a big lesson 2 years ago when Ryan had left and John came in. We've become very focused on keeping that core. Obviously, when Ryan was here, we had that core for a couple of years of Matt Keith and Scott Arson and, you know, those guys that were around the club at that time. And it was important after last year, you know, like we had one of our best dressing rooms we've ever had. And like Pete had said, was at the end of last year, we need to try and keep a lot of these guys. Thankfully, we did. So when Pete decided to move on and give Fitzy the job, the good thing for him and I and the club was the fact that there was a good solid core group of guys there, and we put the finishing touches on things. I think like our experience who would already target, and I think Fitzy liked the idea of a couple of guys. He wanted to bring a couple of his guys in, which I totally get. Head coach, like any head coach at this organisation, is allowed to sign his players. I'll give them some ideas on who's available and what they like and what I know about them, but ultimately it's his decision who he signs. I've always said every head coach, like, it's he can, you know, I've got a bit of expertise there. If he wants to use that, he can. If he doesn't, that's totally fine. But I think Fitzy's done an excellent job with his recruitment. With you know, it's been pretty positive so far. So.
Good. Now, the coaching change aside, how busy has the summer been for you in the background in general terms?
It's always we talk every day. It's our jobs are just 24/7. That's why I just don't get a holiday, because even during the summer, to be honest, I would say summer's probably more busy than in season is, because you've got negotiations to do, player contracts, visas, flights, housing. So you've got to go and get sponsors. It's so time consuming, and we struggle to take holidays, but it's because we're passionate about the club and we love the sport. So it's just trying to find that, you know, we all want the club to do better, we all want to progress, and it's important that we work hard to get there. It was another eventful summer. It would have been a lot easier if we'd had the same head coach, but that's sport, that's hockey, and you've just got to adapt to it and do what you can and work hard to put a good team on the ice.
So on the ice, obviously, you want the club to finish as high as they can and the league do as well as they can in the Challenge Cup and the playoffs. But off the ice, what are the biggest challenges you and the club will face in the coming months?
I think this is my sixth year here. I think now as an organisation, we've got a point where, like, the rest of the league, especially the top two teams in Belfast and Cardiff, have really pushed on. You know, we discussed this, myself and the owner, quite a bit. We need to find a way of obviously getting more fans in the building. We need increased sponsorship and just more brand awareness, more club awareness in Glasgow. It's a big thing. Like, one of the reasons we rebranded to Glasgow was obviously merchandise sales abroad, but also being taken a little bit more seriously in Glasgow. We're starting to see that now. We've got quite a few good things going on with networking in Glasgow and working with different organisations. And ultimately, I think we need to get to a point where we've got 300, 400 seats left to fill, and we need to fill those seats on a more regular basis. Need to increase attendances on a Sunday and midweek. Need better sponsorship. Just need to get our revenue up from sponsorship. Need to look at any new revenue. But it's a double-edged sword. It's like success brings in more fans, more money, But then to get that success, you've got to spend money. So it's getting that balance and making sure we're progressing on the ice every year and progressing off the ice. And that's the difficult one, because you're not always guaranteed that. As we found out 2 years ago with John Tripp, and that season, it was difficult. It's going to happen. It will likely happen again in the future because it's sport. But we've just got to be ready to adapt to those situations and learn quickly when we make mistakes.
One of the questions I'm asked quite often, obviously I do the commentary on the games, as you fully know, is the webcast side of it, the live audios that we did in the past as well. Is there any plans in the future where we could see those becoming a regular thing?
I would never say never. Very much like as an organisation, like, it's our focus is ultimately to get people to come to the games, because I'm a firm believer, like, we are minority sport at the moment. We can become bigger than that, but our bread and butter is people coming to our games, buying tickets, buying 50-50 tickets, merchandise, shirt off the back tickets. That's our bread and butter. I just think anything that takes away from that is dangerous. You know, we've got to focus on what our core aim is, which is we're an entertainment sport, which we need to get bums on seats. Often webcasts kind of do that. I get both sides of the argument. I do get it. But as an organisational standpoint, we've taken the decision not to do webcasts. I get that's not going to please some people, but that's where we are. Could that change in the future? Of course it could. It's not a close up, but as things stand right now, we don't have any plans to do a stream, a visual stream. But yeah, they could. You know, audio is an option. It just depends how attendance has progressed over the, you know, over the next couple of months.
So as you said, you've been here for 6 years now. It's been well documented how much that the club has grown in the time you've been with us, Gareth. Is it still as fresh a job as it was when you first arrived?
I still love going into work every day. Still love the job. I think the organisation that I joined in 2013 is definitely not the same organisation as what we have today. The professionalism, the workload, what the players and the head coach expects out of the staff is just on a different level now. I explain this to the staff all the time. Like, we don't have many staff. I think I'm the only member of staff that's still with the club from that time. But I remember my first season there, and just tiny little things that we've amended and improved on. Professionalism is just on a different level. It's not just the whole league. It's just the standard of the league on and off the ice has just went onto a different level. I was just talking to somebody tonight who was a head coach in the league, and I was just talking to him, and I just said it's just crazy how what's expected of the clubs now. But it's good, because that's exactly what we want to see. As long as we're progressing forward as a league and as an organisation, that's the main objective. If we start stagnating or start going back, that's when we've got a major problem. My aim, and obviously everybody around the club's aim, is we've got to keep progressing the club forward and trying to get better each season, and in turn that will hopefully help us start competing for some trophies.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Springer, and you're listening to The Clan Chat.
Gareth Chalmers taking us into Clan Towers office about what's been going on behind the scenes. The good news is I've remembered to give you the Clan Conundrum answer, so here it comes. Back at the start of the show, I wanted to know, other than Brendan Connolly, who joined Steelers in the summer, who was the last player to play for the Clan, then moved to the Sheffield Steelers? The answer was Brendan Brooks. Well done if you got it right, and we'll have another one for you next time.
Hey, this is Matt Hayward, and you're listening to Clan Chat.
That's it. Keep up to date with the Clan by checking out the website, clanihc.com, or by following us on social media, liking the official Facebook page, or by following us on Twitter and Instagram at clanihc. That's the handle. Tickets for all games in October are available now, so head to the website and get those. And did you miss the Chris Holt interview we did last week? The full uncut version is available as a podcast now, so listen to that if you haven't had the chance yet, as he looks back on his year with the club in 2015-16. You can subscribe to Clan Chat on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Audioboom, and if you do, new episodes will automatically download to your device, just like magic. My thanks to guests this week, Matthew Roy and Gareth Chalmers, producer Stuart Priest for making us all sound great, and finally, to you for listening. We'll return very soon with another edition of Clan Chat. I'm Craig Anderson. Bye for now.